Muddy Knees Media.
Totally Football Show. Today, all the news you need to know from the continent, including Serie A goes viral, the misery of supporting PSG, how Atleti got good, and crossing Turkey off your bucket list. All that plus, of course, Champions League previews in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. All right, listener, thank you for joining us for our Continental Edition. Woohoo! We've got some good times ahead of us today with the whole gang. Everybody's here. We've got Alvaro Romeo. Hi, Alvaro.
Hello.
Hola.
Hola, hola. Buenas tardes.
Rafael Honigstein's here.
Hi.
Hi, Raf. James Horncastle putting in an appearance. And we're told Julian Arons is going to be inbound. Where's Julian right now, James?
He's on the phone, James.
With?
To somebody else.
Yeah. To a player
or
a
guy. PP.
PP.
Paul Pogba.
Oh, yeah. Okay, anyway. All right. Well, he'll be with us very shortly, hopefully, because we've got a lot to discuss and a lot of fringe angles, of course, on the big talking points today. Can we get a quick roundup of some of the big stories that are going to be coming towards our listener over the next hour? Alvaro.
Yeah, Barcelona tops La Liga table ahead of El Clásico and after a catastrophic couple of months when it comes to club affairs. So the fact that they are leading the table is tremendously surprising.
Brilliant. Okay. Rafa, in Germany?
Well, in the table, actually, it's all as it were, James.
Right.
Or as you were. Bayern won, albeit in a very scruffy fashion, sloppy fashion, against Paderborn. Dortmund won in a very impressive fashion, over to Bremen and Leipzig 5-0 at Schalke. But the hottest point of discussion was a anti-Dietmar Hopp banner. Hopp is the owner, well, the de facto owner, the benefactor of Hoffenheim. Borussia Mönchengladbach fans put up a banner with him in the crosshairs. The game was interrupted by the referee, and the Gladbach officials and even the captain went over and got the fans to remove this banner, and there's a whole history because of what happened with Dortmund, and there's a lot of fallout from that.
Right. Okay, we'll hear more about that. Dramatic. James?
Well, there's only one story, really, I suppose, in Italy, which is, as the front page of Gazzetta dello Sport said on Monday, the Scudetto has been quarantined because of outbreaks of the coronavirus, particularly in the north of Italy. It meant four games were postponed. However, Juventus did still play against Spal on Saturday night, and Cristiano Ronaldo matched the record established by Gabriel Batistuta, and Fabio Quagliarelli scored for his 11th consecutive appearance in Serie A, and will perhaps or maybe not get the opportunity to break it this coming weekend, in the Derby d'Italia against Inter.
Right. Also on the score sheet for Juve, Aaron Ramsey. Nice to see him back at it. All right, Jules isn't here for his French headline, but it's going to involve, what, PSG winning? So we'll hear more about that kind of thing.
Getting sent off.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, brilliant. Looking forward to that. Big story, of course, midweek is going to be another set of Champions League matches. On Tuesday, Chelsea taking on Bayern, while Napoli host Barcelona. And that's where we begin our European roundup.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Right, Chelsea taking on Bayern at Stamford Bridge. Napoli and Barcelona simultaneously having their first ever meeting in a competitive fixture. Which one are you going to be watching, Rafa, and why?
Well, I'll be at Stamford Bridge to see Bayern Munich take on Chelsea. Bayern love travelling to London, of course. Lots of big wins for them in recent years. But not against Chelsea. Last time they were here, 15 years ago, they, of course, were knocked out in the quarterfinals by Jose Mourinho's Chelsea.
Was that the day that he hid in the the laundry basket?
Yes, exactly that. And it should be interesting. I mean, Chelsea have all the characteristics that could make it difficult for Bayern, because they have very pacey, very energetic and sort of annoying forwards that can put pressure on Bayern's back line and disrupt their game. At the same time, of course, we have seen Chelsea being vulnerable and giving away chances and not looking 100% like the finished product. So Bayern, I think, will feel that while Chelsea are not to be underestimated, they should have a decent chance of going through, and should probably over the course of the 180 minutes, if not more, have just a little bit too much in terms of depth, in terms of experience, in terms of quality. So they're quietly confident in Munich that this is not going to be the end of their Champions League.
The fact that campaign. This is, of course, a rematch of the 2012 final, is that saying that's a big deal for Bayern, beating finalists that time?
Not really. I mean, there's some survivors still in that team. Neuer is there, Müller is there, but really it bears very little relevance to what's happening. The fact that Bayern managed to win in 2013 and told themselves, this is so part of the mythology now of the club, that the 2012 defeat spurred them on and made them stronger and made them go all the way the year after, has put a very different slant on things. So it's not nearly as traumatic and as big a deal now to think back of 2012. I mean, the players, when they were asked on Friday night repeatedly, they got a little bit annoyed, thinking, you know, do I really have to talk about 2012 again? But deep down, I don't think there's any great sense of this is revenge, or, you know, this is now a possibility to overcome your trauma or anything like that. It's too far away, and it's been tempered by what happened in 2013.
Yeah, I was at Stamford Bridge on Saturday, and I think that Frank Lampard doesn't know yet what his best lineup is, which is something that will probably be interesting to see if he goes for pace with wingers, or if he plays with Mason Mount and Ross Barkley behind a lone striker. And I think that the absence of N'Golo Kanté is going to be missed, because I believe that he's not ready for this game. And Jorginho, he was running the show the other day against Tottenham, and I think that he's one of the players that has improved more over the last couple of months. All that said, Bayern is overwhelmingly favourite for this game, because Chelsea is not even better than last season, I believe, and they were playing in Europa League. And Bayern probably are as good as last season, and they have improved a lot over the last couple of months.
In the group stages, Bayern's numbers were the best the Champions League has ever seen. 6 wins, a goal difference of plus 19, massive wins over Spurs, over Red Star Belgrade, Olympiacos as well. Why aren't they huge favourites? Why isn't everyone talking about Bayern for the Champions League, Raf?
I guess it's because we haven't seen them make another final since Pep went. They came close under Jupankis against Real Madrid only 1.5 years ago, 2018. They did really well in that second leg and pushed Real Madrid all the way. But ultimately, we haven't seen them in the final in almost 10 years now. So I think they're just a little bit off the radar. They're not seen as, I think, as stable enough, as quite as consistent enough as they have been. Certainly when Guardiola was there, I mean, even Thomas Müller, I talked to him for an interview in The Athletic. He said, you know, since Pep has left, it's been a little bit Wild West at Bayern. You never know what you're going to get. We don't have the same control. We can play good stuff, but we can also be, yeah, a little bit disorganized. And Hansi Flick, I think, has done well to at least suggest that he can take Bayern back towards that control, towards that very clearly defined identity that put them at the top of European football, albeit briefly. And it's very interesting to see Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, chief executive, speak about the debt that the club owed in modern times to Hitzfeld, Van Gaal, Pep and Heynckes, and then saying almost immediately that he sees Hansi Flick in a position to perhaps bring Bayern back to that sort of style and that sort of identity. And that was very important for Bayern to have that style and that identity, in brackets, because we didn't have it under Niko Kovac. They're doing their best, I think, to back him and to put him in a position where he can really claim this job now. But in order to do that, he needs to be very convincing, not just against Chelsea, but also against a possible opposition in the quarterfinals.
Meanwhile, while all that's going on, a long way to the south at the San Paolo in Naples, and Napoli will be taking on Barcelona in what is clearly the Maradona a derby. Let's zoom in on their issues for a second. Both managers making their Champions League debut. So that's going to be interesting. Now, when the draw was made, I don't think many people would have given Gennaro Gattuso's Napoli much chance against Barcelona. How about now, James?
Well, it was curious listening to Gattuso after Friday night's win in Brescia, which was their 6th win in 7 games in all competitions, because he was saying, our objective is to get to 40 points, which is the kind of argument that a coach makes when a team is fighting against relegation. And that was put to him, and he said, Well, look, the situation that I came into here was very delicate indeed in terms of the fines that had been levied against the players as a punishment for the strike against Carlo Ancelotti following the Salzburg game. And picking players up, making them put that to the back of their minds has been very difficult. And he's repeatedly said over the last few weeks that this issue of the club basically taking this course of action against the players has been a huge obstacle for them to get over.
I mean, watching them, for example, getting those results in the Coppa Italia, beating Lazio, beating Juventus, the win on Friday, and you're thinking a lot of these players are actually being taken to court by their own club. That they're on this run of results is quite amazing.
It is, and I think Gattuso deserves some credit for basically helping them compartmentalise what has been an unprecedented set of circumstances. And he's got Lorenzo Insigne performing. Insigne, who'd really fallen out of favour and fallen out with Carlo Ancelotti, was being left out not only of the starting 11, but sometimes the squad for their Champions League games. He now is becoming the leader that I think a lot of people want him to be for Napoli. He's particularly in that first half against Brescia was the only player who was kind of trying to take the team by the scruff of the neck. And he scored the winning goal in the league win against Juventus and the winning goal against Lazio in the cup as well, which knocked out the holders of that competition. And Gattuso has gone back to basics. There's none of the kind of tinkering with the team that Ancelotti would do, which was playing players in lots of different positions, changing it from week to week, and the team kind of suffering for that. This time it's just 4-3-3. I think there'll be a lot of Spanish attention on Fabian Ruiz, because Fabian, who kind of disappeared in the first half of the season, is now beginning to come good. Scored a wonderful goal at San Siro against Inter and Brescia as well. Yeah. So he is getting a tune out of this team. And again, to go to your point, James, about moving on from this fact that the club is taking the action against the players that it is, a lot of the players know that they're not going to be there in the summer. So they could just, I'm not going to say down tools, but the club has signed a load of players in January. So the team is stronger for that as well. But they've also signed players for next season as well. You know, Pitania, Rachmani. So it's clear that there is going to be a clear out and a complete change at Napoli. But this is the kind of game that I think really focuses the mind. And we mentioned the big games that they've won of late. They didn't lose to Liverpool in the group stages. They beat them at the San Paolo, and they got a point at Anfield as well. So Gattuso's been saying, please don't put this on me, because that was a different manager, different circumstances when we beat Liverpool. You know, I'm just grateful to be here, and I want to give us the best chance that we can get. But I think they secretly will be quite confident that they can get a result in this game to take it to the second leg, because and certainly going into the weekend before the Barcelona result and that Messi performance, they were looking at it and thinking, actually, this is a lot more even than many people thought it would be in December.
Well, Barcelona has signed the player as well, but he cannot play in the Champions League.
He's cup tied, Martin Braithwaite.
Yeah, so basically Barcelona has 14 squad players available for this game.
Right.
The likes of Sergi Roberto, Luis Suarez, Jordi Alba and Dembélé are out for the game. And I would assume that at least three of those four would start for Barcelona in such an important game. All that said, Barcelona has gotten four wins in a row in La Liga, and they are in a good run of results. And Lionel Messi the other day scored four goals.
Right.
He had a drought when it came to scoring. He was assisting a lot, but he couldn't score for whatever the reason. He was trying a lot, shooting a lot.
For four games,
yeah. Mm. And finally he managed to score. And this is not the first time that he's scoring four goals in his career. What I find astonishing is that he has done that for 10 years. Since the first time he scored four goals, until today, 10 years have passed. That tells you that he's a player that consistently has been up there. I think that Barcelona is strong now, or stronger than they were at the beginning of January. Quique Setién started playing with a 3-5-2 at Barcelona, and I think that the players persuade him, and also he understood that the 4-3-3 is the best formation to play. And Barcelona is the favorite, but at the same time, this game away is always tricky for Barcelona. I was checking some stats before, and since winning the Champions League in 2015, Barcelona have only won twice away in the knockout stages. Once against Arsenal in 2016, and the other one last season against Manchester United.
Right. But one of the most famous defeats, of course, on the road came at the hands of this man.
And they're
And of course, he should be on the field this Tuesday because he's now at Napoli.
He is indeed.
Kostas Manolas.
Yeah, and a lot will ride on how well Kostas plays because Kalidou Koulibaly is still going to be out injured. And another couple of interesting decisions that Gattuso has made is the goalkeeper. He's dropped Alex Meret, who's one of the most talented young goalkeepers, for David Ospina. And we all know that Ospina has got a mistake in him. And he's been very tough on Alan as well. And Alan has been one of Napoli's best players for the last 3 or 4 years. And Gattuso hasn't liked how he's performed in training. Yeah, there's been a lot of speculation about Alan's role in the mutiny as well, and whether or not Napoli should have just sold him in January. So it looks like the first Diego to play for Napoli since Diego Maradona, Diego Demme, will be playing instead of Alan. So I'm fascinated by this, also because I think Gattuso is a big fan of Quique Setién. So he's been spying on him for 5 years.
Has he?
Ever since he was at Las Palmas, and is a big fan of how his teams play.
I'm very surprised about that. I thought that Gattuso would like better a manager like Simeone than Quique Setién. All that said, I'm back to the name of Fabián Ruiz. It was Quique Setién, the manager who gave him a chance in August 2017, I believe. Fabián played a friendly against Milan, and he scored a beautiful goal. And that player had been a little bit out of the radar for everyone in Spain. And Quique Setién was like, this guy is really good, but actually, can you produce this every week? He asked Fabián personally that. And Fabián was like, yeah, let's go for it. And he made him a first team player. And that was the breakthrough season for Fabián, the 2017-2018 season. And ever since, he has become probably the hottest Spanish prospect when it comes to midfielders, because the likes of Parejo, Cazorla, Iniesta is gone, they are already in their 30s, and Fabián seems to be the next big midfielder in Spanish football.
And flourishing under Gennaro Gattuso. Julien Laurent has just joined us. Hi,
hello,
Julien.
Guys.
Hello. How was Paul Pogba?
Not great, thank you.
Really?
No, it was just like one of those commercial interviews, you know, where there's a lot of things you can't ask. So he was in a good mood and we had a lovely chat, but then they forced us to do the interview in English and that kind of stuff, and you know.
These
but
guys
it's
are
cool,
two
it's
Paris
cool.
born and bred boys.
Exactly, yeah, Paris born and bred. Yeah, my English is not great. His English is not great either. So but it will still be cool. You can read it on ESPN very soon, but yeah, it's
okay.
It's one of those.
Anyway, while you were doing that, we were having a nice old chat about Napoli, Barcelona. Rafa's told us all about Chelsea, Bayern Munich. Yeah. But I wanted to talk a little bit more about Martin Brathwaite, whose arrival at Barcelona was so controversial. And he actually contributed an assist.
Yes.
And Messi gave him a hug. He said, I'm never going to wash again. It was all very sweet. It went better than his unveiling did. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, he tried to do the same trick twice and it never worked.
Right.
But then he did a couple of really good tricks.
Did he? The whole thing looked quite awkward.
Nobody edited that and published that.
Wednesday brings a Real Madrid clash with Man City. Ooh. And Lyon against Juventus. How about we talk about those next?
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Ryan Cherky Claxon.
Yes.
Big man's in action, or at least we hope so. Wednesday, as Lyon take on Juventus again. This is the fifth match in 6 years between these two sides. They're always at it. Lyon rather scraped through, Jules, the group stage.
They did. They started well.
Are they looking any more convincing these days?
Not really. Rudy Garcia still has a few issues there. I mean, losing Memphis Depay, their best player, was always going to be a tough one to take. And Jeff Renadelaide as well, a very promising player for them, was another big blow. They recruited in January. Bruno Guimarães, for example, the Brazilian under-23 international, is a very good player, but I don't think he's ready for a game of this magnitude so early on. So he will have to find a way. It seems that the 3-4-3 formation has Garcia's preference for this game. Garcia is very excited to face Juve again, and he's been bigging up himself in the media this week about how he went to Italy and no one was watching Ligue 1 in Italy before, and he was the first and still the last French manager to have managed in Italy and did so well and won his first 10 games and all that rubbish, to try to hide the fact that he hasn't done as well as he should have done with this Lyon team. And this is a hell of a game for them. I think over the two ties, there's no doubt they're not going to go through, I think. But really? with the first leg at home, I think they can cause a few issues to Juve maybe and like not concede a goal. I think that would be a bit like they did with Barcelona last season. They drew 0-0 at home and they kind of looked okay, and then they lost 5-0 away and that was it. And I would think that this could be very similar to last season.
Okay, how are Juve looking coming into this, James?
I wouldn't say great.
They've got Chiellini back.
They've got Chiellini back, and as Sadi pointed out at the weekend, when he's on the pitch, they haven't conceded. Thing is, he's only been on the pitch for one full game, and that was right at the start of the season. The other minutes he's talking about, final quarter of an hour against Brescia and the first 55 minutes of this game against Spal. And it's true that I think they have missed his leadership, his aggression at the back. But Juventus, there's a lot more expected of them come this stage of the season, certainly in terms of the performance, certainly in terms of what Maurizio Sarri can offer that's different to what Max Allegri was doing last year. It's true that their best performances have been reserved for the Champions League so far this season, although, you know, I'm always reluctant to read too much into the group stages. You know, Sarri himself has kind of said, oh, one of the reasons why we're perhaps not doing as well as many people thought we would be in the league this year, even though they're top, is the fact that mentally, after 8 years, these players are, keep winning the league. It's boring, isn't it? And they're saving themselves for the Champions League. Being able to turn it on and off is very difficult, be it for Bayern come sort of February, March under Guardiola, be it for PSG when they get to the knockout stage. And I think in some respects with Juventus, I think some of those comments that Sadi has made have not gone down well, particularly well, with the Juventus hierarchy. It's quite interesting. Agnelli, the president, was on the radio today talking about the impact of the coronavirus and was opportunistically asked about Guardiola. And he said it'd be heresy not to think about Pep Guardiola.
Heresy?
But we're very happy with Maurizio Sarri.
Of course.
So they thought they would be playing better football, whatever that means, come this stage of the season. And I kind of take Jules's point in that Lyon are, in mid-table at the moment.
Yeah.
But I think, as we saw at the weekend, there was a time under Allegri where Juventus got in front and the game was over. And now that just isn't happening anymore. The game always feels like it's not over, right until the very final whistle.
Has there been much reaction in Italy to Emre Can's strong showings, both against PSG, but also domestically? I mean, he's almost transformed this Dortmund team.
Not really, because I think they looked at the profile of the player and thought maybe he isn't the answer to what we want from this Juventus midfield. And I think that isn't just exclusive to Emre Can. I think they look at Matuidi and they think, does he really fit what Maurizio Sarri wants from a midfield? Does even Aaron Ramsey fit?
Yeah, I was just going to say, what do they think when they look at Aaron Ramsey?
Well, I think they need to get goals from people other than Cristiano Ronaldo, and they haven't been getting enough goals from midfield so far this season. That was a wonderful flowing move from back to front for Juventus and Ramsey's goal.
Corre Dybala all'altezza della tre quarti, poi in mezzo Ramsey, area di rigore, alza il pallone e segna. Pallonetto di Ramsey, superisce in uscita.
And that was probably Ramsey's most encouraging performance for a long, long time, because already, although he started his last three games, there was certainly a time where he got injured and seemed to lose his place. And then they moved away from playing 4-3-1-2 with him behind two strikers to 4-3-3. Then Douglas Costa gets injured, the winger who seemed to make that system work. And now he's playing as a number eight, and he seems to feel more comfortable in that number eight position than he was playing a little bit further forward. But yeah, I mean, again, Sarri has been ramming home this Lionel season. You expect me to play the football that I played at Napoli? I need the players that I had at Napoli to do that. I couldn't play the football I played at Napoli at Chelsea because I didn't have those Napoli players. I couldn't play it here at Juventus because I don't have those players. I have to adapt myself rather than the players adapt to me, to the skill set that I've got available to me. And at the moment, this is what we're doing.
Inspiring stuff. Well, yeah, all right. Okay, so Lyon taking on Juventus Wednesday. Meanwhile, the game which a lot of people are calling the outstanding fixture of this midweek is Real Madrid against Man City? Woof. Real Madrid with Barcelona coming up at the weekend, Man City midweek, and all of a sudden the wheels are coming off, Alvaro.
Yes, and without Eden Hazard, because he suffered.
Does that matter? I mean, is he going to make much of a difference?
He hasn't played all season, so surely.
Yeah,
like...
but they speed up his recovery to be ready for this game against Manchester City for a reason. No one in Spain, if they haven't watched Premier League, knows how good Eden Hazard is, because he has played no more than 15 games with Real Madrid, and some of them were at the pre-season. He probably wasn't in his best form, and when he started playing well, he picked an injury against PSG. So he won't play probably for a couple of months, and Real Madrid will have to do without him, and they were doing very well without him and without Marco Asensio for the last 3 or 4 months, because they managed to find the solidity in defence. But they have lost it again, and there is no explicable reason for it. They just started conceding goals. It all started happening against Real Sociedad in the Cup, and ever since then they have blown the leadership in La Liga. Barcelona is leading the table now, and there is another problem that at the beginning no one talked about, but it's there. Real Madrid doesn't have the eagerness to score goals. They don't have players who have the eagerness of Cristiano Ronaldo. For Cristiano Ronaldo, scoring one goal wasn't enough. I think that the player with more eagerness to score at Real Madrid is probably Sergio Ramos, believe it or not. Yeah, because he goes to the corners thinking that he will score a goal, or in the set pieces, he takes the penalties. Karim Benzema has scored only one league goal this year. The other day, against the Levante, Real Madrid played fantastically in the first half, and Eden Hazard had a really good one-on-one, Karim Benzema as well, Casemiro had a goal chance, but they just cannot score goals, and it's very difficult to make it through in Champions League without scoring.
Sounds like good news for Man City, whose manager Pep Guardiola. This is kind of the competition that he can't get right, despite having a wealth of players at his disposal. Rafa, you just done a big piece on this, on to what extent Pep has a Champions League complex. What was the verdict?
There was not one clear answer. It's obvious that some of these defeats were just a case of bad luck or coming up against a better side. It will happen in the Champions League, where the differences between teams are quite small. You have one of your big players out, as Bayern did a couple of times, and it's not quite enough. And you get knocked out, or somebody like Thomas Müller misses a penalty in the semi-final against Atletico. You play outstandingly well, but there's one goal missing at the end. There is also, however, a view that is shared by some former players, that perhaps sometimes he lost himself a little bit trying to, on the one hand, stay true to his very strong convictions and very well-defined playing style, but also, when it comes to the details, adapting a lot to the opposition, especially in those big games. And certainly Müller seemed to be saying that sometimes Pep seemed a little bit torn, and perhaps in that attempt to strike that balance, some of the message got a little bit lost when it then came to explaining to the players exactly what they were trying to do. So this could well have been a factor in some of these games, but it certainly is not the overriding factor that we can look at every single defeat since 2011 and say it's because he was overthinking the games.
This looks a really interesting one, though, not least because it's the first Champions League appearance since UEFA announced the 2-year ban. So Pep,
first time Pep against Zidane as well.
Right, as well. But from Man City's point of view, I mean, the greatest protest they could possibly do, the greatest up yours to UEFA they could do, would be to go and win the Champions League. And it's also likely to be his and their last chance to turn their Champions League form around for a year or two. How much do you fancy their chances, Jules?
I think Real Madrid will knock them out. I just think they...
Why?
I think they too solid. I know what Alvaro has been saying about defensively. I think when they want to, they will turn up and they will be so strong defensively. Let's not forget that against Levante, Mendy was not playing, a left back. And Marcelo is a great Real Madrid legend, but he's not the Marcelo. I mean, he's never been a very good defender anyway. He's been so good on the ball, but not so much defensively. Mendy has been very good defensively. And that back four with Carvajal, Varane and Ramos and Courtois, that back five, has been very solid when the team needed them to. Fede Valverde was on the bench against Levante as well. He will come back. He brings something very different to that team in terms of energy and power. And I just do think that this Real Madrid team over the two legs, I feel, would be too strong for City. I might be wrong, I just think they would be too strong. And I think City can lose against a team that plays with more intensity than them, like Liverpool, but also against a team that is far more efficient than them in both boxes. And I do think that City create a lot of chances but don't take enough of them, and defensively concede one chance and concede usually a goal. And I just think against a team like Real Madrid, even without Ronaldo, that's too much.
I had a chance to speak to Toni Kroos a couple of weeks ago about this, and one of the interesting things he said was that, of course, we needed a bit of time to get over those 50 goals that are no longer there now, that Cristiano isn't there. And also he referenced that eagerness, that obsession to score goals that he brought to the table. At the same time, he seemed to say, albeit in very careful terms, that maybe collectively the team works a little bit harder and is a bit more solid as a result, and even enjoys the defensive side of things because they see that you actually get rewarded for it. So he seemed to be saying that, yes, we have not quite the same firepower up front, but maybe we are slightly more evolved as a team. And it'd be very interesting, I think, to see if their possession game, which is, I think, one of the things that's a little bit underrated. We never think of Real Madrid necessarily as a possession team, but I think they have become a possession team. And that's one of the reasons why they have won so many things, certainly in Europe, whether they can dominate that against City, a team that usually never get dominated possession-wise.
I wouldn't be surprised, sorry, Alvaro, if Zidane play with five in midfield for that game, maybe even for both games.
The good thing is that Zinedine Zidane is not a prisoner of any system. I mean, he has played with the 4-4-2, with the 4-3-3, and if he plays Vinicius, Gareth Bale and Benzema up front, I wouldn't be surprised, because he does so many rotations according to the rival and according to the game that... It's difficult to predict what Real Madrid you will see. Either the one that is slower with the ball but with a good possession, or the one that is so frenetic and so quick with Gareth Bale, Vinicius, Benzema up front. And the fact that Fede Valverde was rested for the game against Levante tells you the high regard that Zinedine Zidane has for this player, who started being a regular in the first team back in August, but he provides so much energy to the midfield as well.
I don't want to point this out, Jules, but I will, is that I just think City are a little bit like PSG.
Here we go.
It's not their
competition. We don't cook our books. We don't cook our books. We don't cook our books.
What was that training ground you saw?
No. It's a different way of... It's a different way of cheating. It's not... We don't cook the books.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Thursday sees the return of the Europa League. Boom.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Europa League, everybody. Last 32, second legs on Thursday. Apart from Braga against Rangers, of course, that takes place on Wednesday. Rangers, wow, what a game that was. Jules, you weren't there for this.
No, it's a shame.
Rangers were 2-0 down at home to Braga, and they won 3-2, which is brilliant. But they've now conceded 2 away goals to Braga, which is less brilliant. So that's quite delicate. That's on Wednesday.
And Yanis Hadji as well.
Yeah. Wow.
Right foot, left foot. You know, he's a Santi Cazorla type of player.
Very nice.
You know, for someone whose dad
was
only purely left-footed, I mean, he never used his right foot for anything, to have a son that is so good with both feet, I think it's pretty amazing.
Some teams have significant leads from the first legs: Wolves, Frankfurt, Inter and Basel. Other games look more delicately poised. Ghent and Roma. Roma only 1-0 up. Celtic and Copenhagen had a 1-1 draw. Man United, who are 1-1 with Bruges. Bruges, of course, who had that 2-2 draw against Real Madrid, you know, in the Champions League earlier on, and other games too. One of the outstanding games from the first legs was Getafe beating Ajax 2-0. Wow. Was there a huge reaction to that in Spain?
Yes, but no one was like, oh, we are so surprised that this has happened. We all know how good Getafe is in Spain. So,
right.
Yeah, they beat Ajax, and according to Opta, the ball was in play only 42 minutes and 36 seconds.
Right.
Which is what I was telling you about Getafe against Athletic de Bilbao a couple of weeks ago. Basically, I sat down there to watch the game, and I felt that nothing had happened, because Getafe doesn't want anything to happen.
Good.
They lost this weekend against Sevilla, 3-0. Mm-hmm. Sevilla needed that victory because they are also trying to qualify for Champions League. And I believe that Getafe is going to try to play as less as possible against Ajax. With their means, they've got some players that they can really hurt in the counter-attacks, the likes of Kennedy, for example, former Chelsea player, or Cucurella, former left-back of Barcelona, who is really quick on that left wing. And I believe that Getafe was the favourite before the tire.
Really?
And I think that he's even more now.
Come on, man.
Wow, he's the third team in the Spanish league.
Yeah,
Getafe were favourite against Ajax with the second leg in Amsterdam. You felt that they were favourite?
Yes.
No, seriously. Man,
you can see what happens in that second leg Thursday
Ajax
night.
Lost this weekend as well against Heracles in the league.
Ajax lost this weekend, and next weekend they are playing against AZ Alkmaar, which is the second in the Eredivisie. So they've got a really tough week ahead of them.
Right.
Decisive week ahead of them.
There you go. Thursday night, anyway, BT Sport will be showing you all those second legs of the last 32 matches in the Europa League. And from, I think, 5 to 8, we're going to be doing a goals show of the second set of 8 matches, which includes Ajax Getafe. Wow. Okay, next up, Rafa, let's round up some of the stories not involving European midweek competition, some of the domestic tales that need telling.
Sancho zu Hakimi, das könnte jetzt gefährlich werden. Hakimi, oh, ein Tor! Ja. Super schnell gespielt, ein klasse herausgespielter Treffer von Borussia Dortmund in der 66. Minute. Mark Erling Haaland, das 2:0.
Nobby Dickel's back, because Erling Haaland's back. What the hell? That's now 40 goals for the season. 40!
Crazy stuff, James.
Guess in how many minutes?
I don't know how many minutes. Do you know,
2,000. So that's a goal every 50 minutes. 5-0.
Insane, isn't it? Incredible. So this was part of a 2-0 win over Werder Bremen, at Werder Bremen, a game which also featured Jadon Sancho picking up his 14th assist of the season in the league. Crazy. But even with that, they're 4 points off the top. Where, Rafa, is it now between RB Leipzig and Bayern Munich for the title?
Well, Dortmund certainly don't think so.
Right.
They still have Bayern in Dortmund to come. Ooh. And Axel Witsel gave a very interesting interview after that win at Bremen, which was very un-Dortmund-like because it was balanced, defensively solid, all the things we haven't seen from Dortmund in a long time. He said, well, we're not thinking about the title or anything, but we want to make sure we're close to Bayern until they come back to us in April. So they are quietly thinking ahead. Believing that if they can keep that distance to a reasonable figure, then maybe they can surprise Bayern this
Such
year.
Such a difficult place to go to the Signal Iduna Park, as PSG discovered just last week, Angels.
They did. They were not very good. Women were good, were better. Haaland was good. I mean, what a club to support. What a life this is. It's just like the amount of drama they created by themselves. Not even like... I mean, after the game, Thomas Meunier, the Belgian right back, saying like, no one told me I was on a yellow, so I didn't know I was going to be suspended if I got a yellow card again, which he did, so he was going to miss the second leg. Presnel Kimpembe's brother on social media insulted Thomas Tuchel. properly insulted him. You're like, what the... you had Neymar saying like, I wanted to play. He hadn't played the last four games before the first leg against Dortmund. He said, I wanted to play with the club, wanted to protect me. I don't understand why... You know, this is not what I wanted.
Every knockout game.
But still, you know, and then he was a bit short of match fitness, although he scored, but he was not very good. And then this weekend he was sent off at the end of the Bordeaux game. And then you obviously had the birthday party of Icardi, Cavani and Di Maria, who had
obviously a
joint birthday party together only 48 hours after the Dortmund defeat.
It was a great party, by
the way. Dancing half naked with Wanda, sending all the videos and everything. I mean, it's just like, wow, what's...
Tuchel was very happy about that.
Oh, God. Tuchel, Leonardo as well, who had a word with the players in the dressing room. It's just, it's just an incredible club, to be fair. It's just, I mean, I don't even know what to say anymore, apart from, like, it's a constant circus, to be fair. And you can spend as much money as you want, have the best players, as many best players as you want. Mm. There's a moment where the lack of discipline and the lack of direction in a way of that club will always cost them, whoever they play against, even if they turn that game around against Dortmund, which they can win 2-0 at home and qualify in 2 weeks time, but yet the problems will all still be there, because at times it's an absolute joke.
Was it not tactical to lose the first leg so they wouldn't have a lead to throw away?
Maybe.
In the second leg,
you know what, actually I did think, my first reaction was like, okay, Tuchel messed it up by going three at the back. He only told the players in his team meeting 3 hours before kickoff, which I think was a huge mistake, to go for a back three when they almost never won every time he played the back three I think the 7 games before the one at Dortmund. I don't understand why he did that, and certainly a lot of the players, some of the big players, didn't understand it either. But maybe it's a bad thing for a good thing. In a way.
Yeah, you keep telling yourself
that. Yeah, I don't care.
Sunday at the Parc des Princes, the supporters with a big banner asking the players if they deserve to wear PSG's colours. Find out, says the banner, on March the 11th.
Yeah, and also carry your balls. They had the
banners.
Yeah,
carry your balls.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is funny because this poetically. Is the best period in PSG history at the same time.
Yeah, and they also extended their lead this weekend because Marseille lost for the first time in
true. But again, in a very dramatic fashion, they bore the 4-3 again. Right. They should have never been in so much trouble. Neymar getting sent off at the end. Cavani and Mbappe having an argument on the pitch because Mbappe felt Cavani should have crossed the ball to him. He didn't, but he did a few minutes later. But still, Mbappe was not happy. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, take your kids to the circus.
Jules, I hear what you're saying about the formation, but were you a little bit surprised, struck, annoyed that PSG just didn't turn up? I mean, they just didn't play, they didn't compete, they had no character, no presence. And second question, are you worried that Mbappe is getting a bit Neymar-fied? Because he looked very uninvolved.
Yeah, and he was the same on Sunday against Bordeaux as well, where every time he touched the ball, he tried to do something very like fancy and or fanciful and like what Neymar is doing. But this is not new. This has been the case since they both arrived at the club 2.5 years ago, I think, that Mbappe has in his mind that Neymar is the example and the guide and that he should follow in his footsteps and all of that. And I think sometimes, you're right, it's completely counterproductive both for the team and also for Mbappe himself. And then I thought everything was disappointed in that first leg, the way they played, the way Tuchel set them up individually in the games where you wanted or expected the big players to turn up. They didn't turn up, they didn't deliver. And even at 1-1, you thought, okay, now be clever and just shut the shop and just don't allow anything else. And 3 minutes later, Haaland scored the second, which is a great goal, but still, this should have never happened. And I still think there's a bit of naivety in that team, which is hard to believe and understand. And maybe a lack of talent and a lack of leadership somewhere on that pitch.
Lack of Haaland, that's what it is.
Yeah, maybe.
I mentioned the fact that Marseille lost first game in how long?
4 months.
4 months.
Against Nantes.
Also saw headline writer's favourite Nice-Brest. That finished 2-2.
Yeah, that finished. It was great.
Okay.
Sexy football.
All right then. Rafa, you were going to tell us probably about RB Leipzig's 5-0 win over Schalke.
And they played really well. And our friend Christo Nkunku had a great game of 4 assists.
Nkunku like clockwork.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, good you could
stuff.
Say that. Yeah.
All right.
But the biggest story is a non-football story in Germany.
Yes. Yeah.
Because there's been an ongoing problem, which I'm not sure you're aware of, between Dortmund fans and Dietmar Hopp, the benefactor of Hoffenheim. Years ago, they protested against him. Then you might just vaguely recall that Hoffenheim had this thing where they had a contraption at their ground that would emit a high-frequency noise to annoy the Dortmund fans who were shouting all this stuff about...
Is this like the one they used at the Maracanã where it played the Looney Tunes music over the visiting supporters?
I think this one was more kind of like oral warfare-like.
Right.
I mean, no one was injured, but it was very unpleasant.
But this was actually put there by the club, was it?
Well, by some rogue employee by the club without the knowledge of anyone else at the club,
right,
who then resigned. Anyway, so there's been a whole ongoing struggle between Dortmund fans who see it as very untoward that somebody comes in as a millionaire or billionaire in his case, bankrolls this village club and takes them to the Bundesliga. As far as they're concerned, he personifies everything that is bad about kind of investor-led modern type football. And he has threatened them repeatedly with sanctions. And at the last game, when 50 Dortmund fans or so were again singing Dietmar Hopp, you're the son of a so-and-so, he actually reported them to the police. And surprisingly, the police actually looked at all the video footage, identified some individual fans, took them to court.
On what charge?
On insulting. And they were, in the first instance, convicted. Also, because this had been a repeated problem, the German FA actually have banned Dortmund fans from going to Hoffenheim games for 2 years.
You're kidding.
So all fans are not allowed to go at all. Now, Borussia were playing Hoffenheim on Saturday. The Borussia Mönchengladbach fans, who are no friends of their fellow Borussia brothers from Dortmund, put up a banner with Hopp's face in the crosshairs,
right,
which Dortmund fans used to show all these years ago. Right. So it was kind of a reference. This happened on a day when all Bundesliga clubs held a minute of silence in memory of the victims of the shooting attack, right-wing terrorist shooting attack in Hanau, just outside Frankfurt. And even though this was like 60 minutes later, Max Eberl, the Borussia Mönchengladbach sporting director, and many media commentators felt that on this particular day, this was extremely bad taste to have somebody in the crosshairs. And he put it in a context which is perhaps a little bit unfair to the ultras, but nevertheless fed into this idea that they were out of order and shouldn't have done it. He certainly went over, tried to remonstrate them. Lars Stindl, the Borussia Mönchengladbach captain, also went over. They took down the banner, but the referee was prepared to even call the game off. And now this has led to a big debate about what is acceptable by way of insults and protest and so on, and what oversteps the line. And I don't think they're necessarily easy answers, but it shows you just how sensitive the climate is at the moment in Germany.
All right. There'll be some pretty wild off-field tales from Italy coming up next as we continue our roundup of the big stories around Europe.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
James, four Serie A matches called off this weekend due to fears over the coronavirus. Doubts over what's going to happen with next weekend fixtures. A lot of talk that the league may be forced to hold some or even all of the games behind closed doors, because effectively a lot of public meetings are being shut down now by the Italian government under emergency measures.
When was the last time you were in Italy again?
Last week.
Oh, no!
It's a very complicated situation, James. I think it's unprecedented in many ways, because we've had games in a round of fixtures cancelled before because of a tragedy out of compassion for the victims, be it the Morandi Bridge disaster a couple of years ago in Genova, be it the death of Davide Astori as well. With this, I think it reflects the uncertainty at the moment in Italy as to whether this will stabilise. It may get better, it may get worse. And Inter, for example, have been holding talks with the league, the Italian Football Federation, who likewise have been talking to the government about when they can replay this game against Sampdoria, which was due to take place on Sunday night. And Inter look at their fixture list and, like, we're jam-packed. At the moment, we're still in three competitions. We have to honour those competitions. We can't basically forecast when we might be out of one or how far we might go in one. So at the moment, the only prospect of replaying that Samp game is right at the end of May, when the season's already finished and the European Championship is at the door. And that's another thing to consider here, is that some games of the European Championship will be held in Italy, in Rome. And we should, I think, pose the question that for the moment, yes, Italy is the most affected country after China and South Korea when it comes to the coronavirus. But I wouldn't expect it just to remain a problem for those three countries. And having a truly continental competition in the summer, in which we play all over Europe, is going to be a very, very complex situation unless there is some sudden solution, or the coronavirus, we find a way of containing it and dealing with it.
No way of knowing where this is going to end up. In the meantime, of course, huge doubts over Inter's Europa League game coming up this Thursday, which is due to be held at San Siro against Ludogorets. They're 2-0 up from the first leg. This weekend, Lazio did play. Juve did, as you mentioned, the 2-1 victory over Brescia. Lazio stayed a point behind La Signora with a 3-2 win at Genoa, making it now 20 games unbeaten, with Ciro Immobile notching up his 27th goal of the campaign. That's his 27th league goal. That's just extraordinary.
It is. It matches the most prolific season had by a player, at least up until this stage, which was Juan Antonio Angelillo back in the late 50s. And Lazio just keep going. And Simone Inzaghi isn't hiding from the Scudetto talk. Very much, it's not a forbidden word for him and his players. And just listening to Andrea Agnelli, the Juventus president today, saying that the fact that they didn't expect to be in the title race and have no expectation around them makes them dangerous. Because I think it's a dream that this Lazio players believe in. They're not weighed down by that weight of expectation in the way that Inter are after appointing Conte, making the signings that they have done. And I wonder about the psychology of the title race now, with Inter having not played at the weekend, being 6 points behind Juventus, 5 points behind Lazio. It looks like the Derby d'Italia on Sunday will be played behind closed doors in Turin. Again, how will that impact how that game is played? I think this is really having a huge effect on what is one of the most kind of gripping title races at the moment. And ultimately, public health comes first in all this. This is the priority because, as Arrigo Sacchi said, football is the most important of the least important things.
Nicely put, Arrigo. Yeah. Roma, just to mention, got their first home win in the league for more than 2 months. They beat Lecce with very much Mkhitaryan at the star. Lecce fans on their way to that game had a pretty colourful trip. Did you follow this story at all?
Well, I saw they were attacked by...
Yeah, so basically they were driving up the A16 to Rome, minibuses of Lecce fans, and they overtake some Bari supporters, and there are one or two insults out the car windows as they go by. Bari supporters decide they're not letting this one go, so they call to their friends who are in the coaches of Bari fans, which are further up the road. So they basically pull their coaches across the motorway, blocking the entire road, and the Lecce fans arrive. There's about 50 Lecce fans, and there's now 200 Bari supporters around them. And for about half an hour, they just go at it. It's just complete warfare. This is
like
about
a fight like Chelsea and Spurs fans had on Saturday afternoon.
I didn't see that one, but this is midday on a Sunday afternoon.
Incredible.
Across three or four lanes of an Italian motorway, they basically pull the coaches across to block the motorway, and for half an hour they just go at it. Yeah. And one of the Lecce minibuses is basically burnt. There's all these cars that happen to be there have got their tires ripped to pieces because they didn't just put the coaches across the motorway; they threw nails down on the tarmac. It's incredible.
I mean, one of the contingency plans to deal with keeping the season going whilst Italy deals with the coronavirus at the moment was to actually play games in the south where where the virus is yet to...
The virus days.
Precisely. And Agnelli said there could be some public order problems there.
Well,
not referring to this, but still.
Incredible. All right, after this, let's get a quick catch-up on Spain and Alvaro. We can hear why Atleti are suddenly doing really well.
Para poner tercero al Atlético de Madrid, para culminar la remontada en el Metropolitano, para redondear una semana de felicidad.
Alvaro, Atlético Madrid, you said they had no chance against Liverpool. Now look what's happened.
Did I say 70-30?
Maybe you did. All right. Maybe. But they had that victory in classic Atlético fashion,
yes.
Vintage stuff. And then this weekend, they're scoring buckets goals. Well, they got 3 goals against Villarreal.
Yes, because the victory against Liverpool raised the spirits. But I tell you what, if they hadn't beaten Liverpool, I think they wouldn't have overcome Paco Alcácer's goal because Villarreal scored first. But now they ooze confidence. And Atletico de Madrid, I think that they are going to struggle against Liverpool because basically they are going to stay in their box for 60 or 70 minutes. And just if the ball is around there, it's going to be really difficult not to concede at some point. But the victory was very important because Atletico de Madrid feels that now they can again compete toe-to-toe with these teams, which is something that they needed to know after what happened in the Super Cup. They beat Barcelona but not Real Madrid in the final, after what happened in the last games against Real Madrid. And I think that Simeone has found, or is going to give more continuity, to put it some sort of way, to the defensive structure. We know who the defenders are, more or less, the ones that played against against Liverpool, perhaps with the inclusion of Kieran Trippier, and then Thomas, Saul and Koke in midfield. Right. So that's going to be how Atletico de Madrid lineup will start.
Okay.
And then the strikers up front will probably switch Correa one day, Morata another one, Diego Costa another one. But I think that Simeone is going back to the basics again. And normally going back to the basics for him means having a seven-man solid structure and then attack whenever we have a chance to do it.
João Félix, by the way, on the score sheet on the weekend against Villarreal, that's his first goal in almost 5 months. Elsewhere in the Liga this weekend, Valencia got beaten 3-0 by Real Sociedad. Wow, tough week for Valencia after getting absolutely taken apart by Atalanta 4-1 in the Champions League.
A dreadful week for them. But
didn't they have expected goals higher than Atalanta in the game?
Yes.
And really?
I was on Twitter with James talking about that. I was saying that the game should have been 4-all. James said that Atalanta should have won 6-4. Anyway,
oh my God,
you know what? The one thing that I saw against...
What, you disagree with the 4-4?
No, I think maybe six scores are fair. No, I mean, we talked about this on Thursday after the game, and I think we said similar things, but, you know, 4-1 was the actual score.
Yeah,
no,
and it was. Fair play to, so Italian.
Fair play to Atalanta, but...
But?
There is something that I found...
magnificent.
There is something that I found puzzling, is the fact that in the last 20 minutes of that game against Atalanta, Valencia had a player like Vaz who doesn't cross the ball well, and they had only one striker in the box, with 4 or 5 Atalanta defenders, and the guy sending the cross, the delivery, always find the striker. And the Gameiro and Maxi Gomez had clear chances, surrounded by 4 centre-backs. So Atalanta's defence that day was awful as well. That is the only thing that gives Valencia any hope.
Right.
The fact that against Atalanta, they saw that the opponent has plenty of flaws as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that Maxi Gomez chance, I think the cross came in actually from Ilicic. No, I mean, it was a bizarre bit of...
Yeah.
Anyway, they're a good time team, Atalanta. They don't care too much for the consequences. Also in Spain this weekend, Alvaro.
Well, in Spain this weekend, Joaquin scored the goal for Real Betis, and he became the La Liga's fourth highest, the player with the 4 most appearances.
Fourth most appearances, wow.
In La Liga.
How many?
Joaquin has played 442 games in La Liga, which is really astonishing considering that he spent 2 years in Italy playing for Fiorentina. He's got Eusebio, Raúl and Zubizarreta in front of him. What I find quite interesting about this list is that if you take the 20 players that have played more games in La Liga, they all started playing in the 80s. Perhaps because in La Liga players or the league didn't have as many games in the past. Or maybe because the players' careers were over effectively at the age of 30.
Yeah.
Many players from the past are not in this list.
Yeah.
But yeah, Joaquin is an example of longevity. Let's not forget that he played the World Cup in 2002. And he's got 1 more year at Betis. So he will definitely surpass Raúl in the list, who is the second. And he will be closer to Andoni Zubizarreta, who is up front with 80 more games than Joaquin.
Okay. Rafa, you have a question about La Liga.
What happened to Rodrigo for him to get sent off in the reserves game? Well, the B team. And why does it affect his chances in the Clásico?
Yeah, because Rodrigo got sent off playing for Castilla, Real Madrid B team, because he scored a goal and he celebrated that goal in front of the goalkeeper to his face, basically.
What did he do?
He just shouted at the goalkeeper's face after scoring a goal.
Huh.
Because the goalkeeper wanted to question him why he didn't stop the game because an opponent was on the floor allegedly with an injury. I think that was the case. And Rodrigo scored the goal. He didn't like that the goalkeeper went to him in an inquisitive way.
Expect inquisitive way in Spain.
he won't be playing the Clásico.
Right.
He won't be playing El Clásico because he got 2 yellows for that action.
Wow.
Number 1 for shouting at the goalkeeper. Number 2 for not liking getting the first yellow card. And he will be missing El Clásico, which will be happening on the 1st of March, Sunday at 8 p.m. UK time.
Okay. That Rodrigo thing. So basically the keeper comes over and he just kind of waves his hands like... and gets a yellow card for it. That's wrong.
Unsporting conduct, James.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Next up, we're going to go to Turkey. But first, Paddy Power.
Hello, listeners. It's producer Ben, and I'm on the line with Lee Price from Paddy Power. Lee, it's a huge week in the Champions League again, and let's start with Napoli. Can Gattuso's men do it and knock out Barcelona?
God, I'm still getting used to the fact that he's manager at Napoli. Weird. But he's doing well, clearly, as they've beaten each of the top three in Italy over the last month or so. Beating Barcelona, though, is still beyond them, according to our odds makers. We make it 11-5 at the home side win in Naples, with Barcelona the 6-5 favourites. That the Catalans are better than evens, though, is testament to Napoli's form. The draw here is 5-2. Barcelona are 1-4 to qualify.
All right, moving on to Liverpool. Jurgen Klopp thinks that Juve are the favourites for the Champions League this season, but what say you at PP?
We say stick to football management, Jurgen. You're pretty good at that. Your bookmaking skills seem to leave something to be desired. Although, if you fancy doing a bit of spokesperson work, this slot is very much available. Wouldn't take much to upgrade in the current incumbent either. We make Juventus 11-1 to win the Champions League, which puts them as sixth favourites in our betting, behind Man City, Liverpool, Bayern, Barcelona and PSG. Not a bad list. Klopp, of course, can afford to play his brilliant reserve team in the league and keep his big guns for Europe. Not that that worked against Atleti last week, though.
And finally, sticking with the old lady, they've got a huge game with Inter on Sunday. How's this one going to play out?
A juicy one. The type of game that I find very difficult to call. Which is probably why our odds go a little route one here. Juventus, the reigning champions, at home, are 10-11 favourites to win this, as you might expect. Inter are given a 13-5 chance of winning, with the draw 12-5. That Cristiano Ronaldo fella is odds on to score and break the scoring record the guys have been talking about. However, we make one all the most likely scoreline. Very number wang.
You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. Prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply, and when the fun stops, stop. Super League in Turkey. It's been a mad season. The big sides outside the top positions, newly promoted Sivasspor leading the way. Sunday then saw the Intercontinental Derby, no, not that one, Fenerbahce from the Asian side of the Bosphorus against Galatasaray from the European side, and an extraordinary game. Rory Smith was there, and excitingly, he's now here on the line. Hello, Rory.
Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Listen, thanks for joining us. What made you go along to see this Fenerbahce-Galatasaray clash?
Well, basically, what you've just said. I think it's really interesting that in Turkey this year, you've got Sivasspor, who are top. Trabzonspor was sort of second, third. You've got Istanbul Başakşehir here as well, who are trying to compete for the title. And it's very strange that in a country where the Istanbul Bid 3 dominates so much that you've seen all three of them struggle. And I kind of wanted to go out and find out why. And I figured that if I was going to go, I might as well go and take in a game or two. So I went to see Besiktas Trabzonspor on Saturday night, who were the other two members of Turkey's Bid 4. And then the Intercontinental Derby on Sunday night was too good an opportunity to miss.
Brilliant. And it turned out to be quite a match. 3-1 for Galatasaray, which is actually, for all that talk of them being outside the top positions, they are now back in a three-way tie for top spot. It's them, Sivasspor and Trabzonspor all level on points.
Yeah, and they're the reigning champions. And I think from this point on, you probably have to say they're favourites to win the title. Although there's a feeling in Turkey that Trabzonspor might be best placed to do it, who are a kind of traditional giant, but not on the same level as Gala, Fener and Besiktas. But I think that for all three of them, the horizons have shrunk quite a lot from where they were when you had Didier Drogba and Wesley Schneider at Galatasaray, and you had Robin van Persie at Fenerbahce, and Demba Ba at Besiktas, maybe a slight level below that. All three have fallen some way in the last 4 or 5 years. Their record in the Champions League is really poor. And I think there are fundamental kind of structural issues in Turkish football that need sorting out.
There's a great viral clip of Galatasaray fans smashing up their apartment after Onyekuru's miss for Gala in the derby on Sunday. What was the atmosphere like in the stadium?
It doesn't let you down, I have to say. The Intercontinental Derby lives up to expectations. I've never been to a game that was quite so fractious. I apologise for the... that's the German police coming past. I do apologise. I'm in Frankfurt. The German police aren't right. In Turkey. Yeah. I should highlight that. but no, it was a really fractious game. I mean, there must have been a foul every 30 seconds. It was not a sort of great, flowing match of football. The noise is incredible. Everyone sort of warned me beforehand, sort of take earplugs, make sure you cover your ears, you'll come out deaf sort of thing. And you go inside the sort of toddler, and it is really, really noisy. And I think what's most sort of striking about it to an English ear is that it's constant. It's not kind of big waves of noise when something exciting happens. It's just this constant beat of noise that doesn't really drop until Galatasaray go 2-1 up and threaten to win a game at Fenerbahce for the first time in 20 years, which silenced most of the people in the stadium. If I was the sort of person to have a bucket list, it would be on my bucket list, and it lives up to what you think it's going to be like.
Yeah, 12 bookings. I read 3 red cards, and the Fenerbahce fans are chanting for their coach to resign. Not the boss for us, I guess, to use an old...
Yeah, they're quick. So this is one of the problems in Turkey, that they are very quick to decide that everyone has to be sacked immediately. There's one of the kind of standard bearer coaches in Turkish football was Abdul Avcı was sacked by Beşiktaş after about 3 months a few weeks ago, and he kind of went into the club saying, "Look, I'm going to need 2 years to build something." But you don't get 2 years in Turkey. If you get a few weeks, you're doing pretty well. So after the game last night, when you kind of left the stadium by the VIP entrance, you had 300-400 fans outside, a huge riot police presence, as the fans, I think, were allowed to kind of let off steam a little bit. They chanted for the coach to be sacked. They wanted Ali Koç, who's the multi-billionaire owner of Fenerbahce. They were chanting fairly disparaging things about him as well. He had to kind of make an escape from the stadium. Losing the Intercontinental Derby isn't a great idea for anybody. Fenerbahce will have a rough couple of weeks, and they are of the traditional elite. They're the ones who are struggling the most.
Okay. Rory, what are you doing in Frankfurt now? Are you off to another game?
I'm going to Eintracht against Union Berlin, as I believe it's correctly pronounced, James.
Yeah. Rafa's nodding. So top work on that one. Oh, brilliant. Okay. Well, that sounds excellent. Thank you so much for bringing us a little bit of the flavour of the Intercontinental Derby, Rory. And we look forward to catching up with more of your worldwide football adventures soon.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Rory Smith of the New York Times, out and about in football land. All right, that pretty much wraps it up for today. But we've got one or two little things that we'd like to mention. Jules Cavani.
Oui, bon, ce ballon de Di Maria. Le voilà, 200e.
200 goals, James, in 298 appearances now for PSG. He should have never got there because he should have been sold in January, but he stayed.
Right.
And there was a little ceremony for him at the end of the game on Sunday.
What
he was crying. They gave him a little trophy with 200 on air, and the stadium was, you know, singing his famous songs and all of that, and all the family was in the stands, so he was crying, and it was beautiful.
But, right. Okay. Know. Tariq Abdullah has a question for you. Jules, can you preview the best talents of Lyon, Cherki and Aouar, ahead of the clash with Juventus? Also, why does every year Jean-Michel Aulas offer players to Juve via the media?
Aulas loves Twitter, as you know. He follows our own James Horncastle,
does he?
For example.
Does he follow you?
He does, yeah.
He does. And he's very quick as well to tweet you if he's not happy with something you said or...
Has he tweeted you, James?
Or wrote.
Only to say, James, I like these Juventus players.
And you remember as well how for his women's side,
yes,
he likes going straight to the players on Twitter to go like, come to Lyon, and almost like stalk them until they sign.
True, it's quite strange.
Alex Morgan is quite strange, and at the time of we used to do the BT EFS show on BT Sport, we used to have a lot of fun with that. But yeah, his relationship with the media is interesting, and with social media as well. And for Cherki and Aouar, for Cherki, we talked a lot about him on the show already. I don't know if he will be involved or not on Wednesday night. He played with the under-19s at the weekend against PSG under-19 in the Youth Cup in France, and PSG heavily won that game. Cherki was quite frustrated, and it was not a good afternoon for him, but he's an incredible talent. He's only 16.
Wow.
And has already showed so much with the first team, so he's definitely one for the future, and they will allow time to really mature and explode. And for Aouar, I was thinking the other day, watching him play, how good he will be. And if someone like Klopp and Liverpool sign him, for example, which I think is a possibility, and he's certainly a player that they're looking at right now, Klopp will make him one of the best in the world, because I think he has that technical ability that is
one of the best in the world at what?
At being a midfielder that can do everything, and he needs to improve his defensive work rate and positioning, and but he's so intelligent, and he's so good on the ball, and he has so much energy, and he can play short and he can play long, and he can dribble and he can accelerate, so he can be a box-to-box player. But I still believe he can be very good at sitting as well, because he's got that awareness and that technical ability, like a Pjanic, for example, to play in that position. And I just think that we will see him more and more with the French national team as well, I think, which is going to help him a lot. But I want to see him in that game against Juventus because I think he's got so much to give that he would be one of the key of the game for Lyon.
Really?
Yeah.
James, anything that you perhaps should have mentioned earlier on that you'd like to just throw in?
Well, another thing to look out for at the San Paolo in midweek is Dries Mertens, who is one goal away from matching Marek Hamšík as Napoli's all-time top scorer.
Incredible.
Yeah, incredible game in which to do that.
Yeah, amazing that neither of them was actually really a striker.
No, and Mertens certainly wasn't a striker when he signed for Napoli. He was a winger who'd often come off the bench. And
but Hamšík was never a striker. I mean, he never played.
Yeah. And he was often their top scorer, particularly when he first joined the club. But Mertens will have done it in fewer games, fewer seasons.
Right.
Remarkable what Dries has done as he chooses his next club, perhaps, with his contract still running down. Well, I think he would still like to stay in Naples, but there's been interest from Inter, certainly, to take him up there because Conte can't have enough. He wants more and more strikers. And there was interest from here. And remember, Chelsea bid for him in January as well. And I think his wage demands are very high, though, because it would be his last contract.
Oh, right.
So,
Alvaro, anything else you want to throw in?
Yeah, Marca published last weekend that Paul Pogba is no longer Real Madrid's target.
Woo!
It's Camavinga.
Leave him alone.
Eduardo
he's only 17.
He got Eduardo taken out, didn't he, this week?
Yeah, badly as well. Proper badly. He's been the second player fouled the most in France after Neymar.
Right.
Because, and despite playing in a central midfield the role, you know, which you would expect more someone like a forward like Neymar to be fouled a lot. But yeah, he's only 17. There's plenty of time for him to go to Real Madrid. So
footballers are so young these days. It's the best crazy.
It would be, I think it would be crazy for him to leave Rennes now.
Right.
And I think it would be crazy for Real Madrid to bid 60-70 million euros for him now. He's 17.
It's crazy.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. Hopefully some games get played. Hopefully some great goals get scored.
You know, next weekend is an incredible weekend. So the Clásico is on Sunday.
Yep.
You've got
Juve Inter
hopefully, on Sunday. You've got the Rhône Derby on Sunday as well, the Lyon Saint Etienne game with Claude Puel in big trouble and all of that. They're not winning. They haven't won in 6 or 5. Mm. You've got the Ajax AZ Alkmaar. We said first against second in the Eredivisie as well.
Anything in Germany?
There's the League Cup final in England, for example, as well. Yeah. In Germany, there's always big games. Rafa is just checking quickly.
What do you got, Raf?
We haven't got.
We've got Paderborn versus Frankfurt.
We haven't got
Union against.
Super sexy stuff.
But no, it's like, yeah.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right, Jules. That is quite incredible. What a convergence of huge fixtures.
Leipzig Leverkusen is probably the best.
Yeah, that's
that
good, you know. Good.
Yeah. All right.
LL Cool Game.
Yes.
Nice. That's it for today, anyway, listener. Do hope you have a terrific time. There'll be a new Totally Along before you know it. For now, it's many thanks to Alvaro, to Rafa, to Jules and James and producer Charlie and you, listener. And we'll catch you soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. Keep up to date with everything across our Totally Football network at The Totally Show on Twitter. And make sure you check out our brand new website too, thetotallyfootballshow.com.
I'm Andrew Slavin from the Totally Scottish Football Show, and I'm here to tell you why you should be listening to our Scottish show. Number one, it's full of insightful knowledge on Scottish football like this.
It looks to me as though they've spent all their time working on things in training. We go on the pitch and then they just forget it, which happens with players who aren't very good.
Number two, it's got Georgie Hadji's son. Number three, we get to talk about the spaghetti had. Look into it, you should. Anyway, you'll find us every Tuesday morning ready to inform you on the greatest league in world football. Just search for the Totally Scottish Football Show and we'll be there every Tuesday.
Muddy Knees Media.